Welcome to the podcast. I'm Bill Emerick, Deputy Editor at America's Credit Unions. This episode features some of the conversations we had on site during the 2024 Governmental Affairs Conference, which brought more than 6,000 credit union industry leaders to the nation's capital. First up, Associate Editor Brock Fritz talks to Cassandra Worthy, CEO at Change Enthusiasm Global, about how to grow through change. Enjoy.
So we're fresh off your keynote at GAC. You're leading chants, you're asking people to stand up and wiggle. How do you bring so much enthusiasm? And what do you like kind of about talking to crowds like this?
Oh my goodness, it's my favorite part of what I do. Yeah. And it's really being able to share my authentic energy and seeing how that inspires the authenticity of another. Mm. And getting them, you know, moving and then those dance moves, and it just lights me up. Yeah. I mean, I've known for some years that this is what I'm meant to be doing. And every day, you know, when I'm on stage, I'm lit up.
Yep. Yeah. So you say the seat of choice, yes. The driver's seat of change.
Yes.
Why is that important to be in charge of your life, I guess?
It's so important because when we're going through really big change, especially in our professional life, it can feel like the change is happening to us. Sure. We didn't ask for it. It's just walked in the door, popped us across the face. We're bleeding and we don't know why. And it can feel like our power has been stripped from us. Well, in this mindset, it puts you right back in that seat of choice. You do have the power to choose how you experience what's happening around you, how you can make it work for you. And so that's why it's so important to leave them in that seat of choice, because it is up to you how you experience the change.
And why don't we just kind of break down what that means a little bit? So you talk about changing your emotions. What emotions are those that many people feel with change that end up being flipped into the positive?
Yeah, most commonly the signal emotions, what I call them, that really invite opportunity are fear, frustration, anger, anxiety, and grief or loss, which is honestly one that we don't talk about enough, I think, in the workplace. Because when you lose a job, when you perhaps are working for a new manager and you've lost the other one, there's grief that happens there. Yeah. I know I felt grief when my company was acquired and I was in a different company. It's like I grieved what I knew, right? And so I think that's very real. But of course, all emotions are signals. They're all data. You know, the gratitude, the enthusiasm, the excitement, the joy, all of it is data. And it's really up to you. How do you use it? Right, it's information, guideposts, and ultimately energy, and it's infinite.
Yeah. And like you said, you've been doing this for a couple decades. I assume it's a lifelong pursuit and practice.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
It's got to be. And I will tell you, the mindset, three steps, it's very simple, right? The signal, the opportunity, the choice. It is not easy. It's not easy, especially when you feel like you're being overwhelmed by those emotions. And so the more that you can practice it, rewiring the brain, the better and better you'll become at actually that emotional agility. Kudos to Dr. Susan David, who introduced emotional agility, but the quicker that emotional processing will happen.
Yep. So the people that you struck a chord with today and want to start practicing, what are a couple of things they can maybe do tonight or tomorrow to get this ball rolling?
Download the worksheet.
Yep.
Find your accountability partner over the next few days and begin practicing the mindset. I would also invite everyone to go to changeenthusiasmbook.com. You can actually download the first chapter of my book and also purchase it if you want to actually put it into practice, because it's very practical. There's a lot of worksheets, exercises in the book to help you in the journey as well.
Next, Brock speaks with family-focused Federal Credit Union CEO Amy Broderson about the challenges facing small credit unions.
So you're fresh off the small credit union roundtable.
That's right.
What was the topics in there? What'd you learn?
Well, we talked a lot about developing your staff, talent development, compensation, trying to be able to get the best talent on limited resources. We talked an awful lot about just how small credit unions are able to compete in the marketplace. We had a couple different topics like business accounts and how to get on the CUNA board, how to get more involved, board development, board engagement, you know, things that are challenging for small credit unions.
Sure.
Building a branch was one of the topics. Camaraderie is the big thing. A lot of small credit unions dealing with a lot of the same things every day in the same room, and it creates a nice cohesive atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably one of my favorite events of the whole conference.
Okay. Yeah, do you leave it like encouraged? What's the atmosphere, I guess?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think part of it is I see a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Because we're in small credit union and we know a lot of people. We're collaborating a lot. We have to at our size. Mm-hmm. And so we get together once a year in person. Lots of times we are involved and see each other on Zoom meetings. But this is an opportunity to see each other in person and visit. And we're just one big family.
Yep. Yeah, so you said you have to collaborate and be in touch with people. Why is that so important for small credit unions?
Yeah. I think that is the magic, the beauty of our movement is the collaboration. If I don't have an idea, I can look to my colleagues and they'll share an idea. Where else are you going to go? What other industry are you going to go where you're sharing your secrets with each other?
Yeah.
And we do that here. We do it very well and we're openly do it and happy to share it with each other. If I have mm-hmm. something that another credit union can use, I'm happy to share it out to them. And there's times I need something and I can look out in credit union land and I'll say, hey, does anybody have this resource? And somebody always steps up.
Sure, yeah. So you're here with a couple board members and you're going to be walking around this week. What's kind of at the top of your mind, whether talking to legislators or what issues stand out?
Yeah, I think top of my mind this week is the overdraft protection rule coming down from CFPB. I realize that larger credit unions are the ones that are being targeted, but we all know that's going to trickle down to the smallest of smallest. So definitely that's on my radar, watching that, seeing where that goes. The interchange push again, the Dodd-Frank 2,
yeah.
Trying to get interchange, that's on my radar too. You know, small credit unions run on small margins. We don't run high ROAs, sometimes like us, not on purpose because we're trying to evolve and do things. So, and we're trying to service our members. And so a lot of those two particular issues hit the bottom line and take away our ability to do the great things that we're doing.
Sure.
One of the things I shared with, I'm on the Small Credit Union Committee, one of the things I shared with this morning when we met with CFPB and NCUA, and I shared with them that when I come to D.C., I bring 3,000 people with me, and that's my 3,000 members. And so it's not just about my agenda, but it's what I'm looking out for the best interest of these folks. And I think we have 6,000 people. If you take that and you think of all the members that are behind those 6,000 people, that's who's coming to Washington. It's not just me.
Yeah, yeah.
And my voice is being carried forward. So when I'm meeting with my lawmakers, whether it be a senator or a congressman, I'm very well aware that that's who I'm speaking for. It's not an ego thing or a personal agenda. It's what are their needs? They need to be heard.
In our next conversation, I talked to Jim Morrell, President CEO at Peninsula Community Financial Credit Union. He shares how the institution builds on its community development mission.
So what's new at Peninsula Community Financial these days?
The year started and we're continuing to build on sort of what we set forth to do 10 years ago or so with our community development mission. So we're really aiming, our target audience are those households that are living at or around a household survival budget. And we've developed personas around that of, single moms in their mid-30s that help us make decisions about our products and services. Those single moms might have a couple of kids and really busy lives and things like that. So how can we make their financial decisions easier, a little less stressful, lower their anxiety because they have plenty going on mm-hmm. in the rest of their lives? So we do things like Save to Win price-linked savings accounts, lower interest for timely payments on loans that automatically reduce their interest rates. If they make those on-time payments, we'll reduce the interest rate by 1% every year for up to 3 years. So sort of building in the financial incentives for people's positive financial behavior seems to work.
Can you think of an example of a specific member who you've helped and how it's changed their life?
Yeah, again, maybe 3-4 weeks ago, we had an elderly or a retired woman, a widower, that came to us about 3 weeks into the month, and she humbly asked for a $100 loan.
Wow.
And she knew that she didn't have the money to put groceries on her table for the next week. So we sat down, we were hearing what was going on, and took a look at what she had going on, learned that she had multiple other credit balances. So by the time we consolidated that debt for this member, we were able to produce or generate $300 additional monthly income for her by reducing those payments. So she was $400 ahead Wow. She didn't need the loan that she asked for $100 because she was actually making money now because we were able to lower her payment.
So what are some of your other priorities for the rest of the year?
Yeah, so building on that community development mission and the member that I just shared about. In 2019, my board, with their strategic vision hats on, their lenses on, said we really should be doing something more with either the Native American market or the Hispanic market. We're working with an individual right now in house contract to pay off a balloon payment. There's a lot of things that are going on where the seller is, let's say, not very eager to make this work well for a Hispanic borrower. But from our perspective, we met the member, talked with him, understand that he, his wife, and their 7 children would be losing their shelter at the end of February. So we were able to approve him based on his income and based on what his credit score would have been had those payments over the last 5 years been made on time. Rather than a 490 credit score, it would have been like 640. So we were able to justify approving that loan, and where we're at right now is just trying to cross the finish line because the seller is not giving us an accurate or valid account number to wire the funds. So there's a lot more to that story, but we have had, including myself, I think 7 or 8 individuals on our team that are working to try and help this member and his family remain in the house.
Wow.
My mom just shared with me recently, or reminded me of why she makes her bed every morning. It's because that when we go to get in bed at night, we can pull back those covers like opening a gift which other people may not have. And so having that understanding of that our frontline staff, again, listening to this member, he only speaks Spanish, so we had one of our bilingual staff that was doing all of the interpretation for the various team members that were working with him. And we're hopeful that this will cross the finish line with a happy story.
Yeah.
Oh. Happy ending.
Yeah. You must have great employees.
They're a tremendous group of people.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much going on where you are, so that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. How do you develop employees like that? I mean, what do you, like as a leader, how do you inspire that kind of commitment?
So I think we all have that fortitude within us to do good, to do well. We look for that in the process and open as a leader, just, you know, try and empower people to do that listening and to find a way to say yes. I don't review every loan decision. I don't look at every opportunity we have to support somebody's savings habits, but I do try and make sure that we are providing the resources, the tools, the training, the education for our team members to do that. And equally as important, I think, Bill, for what we do is while we're invested as a member-owned financial cooperative in that financial success of our members, we also have to be equally committed to our team members and their financial success through their income that they make, through the benefits that they receive for us. They need to feel supported financially as well. The longer that they do this, the longer that they practice that these efforts that I'm talking about, the better and better we all get at listening and hearing and sharing information. We share the stories, one from each of our branches and our call center and our underwriting area, our community financial educators. So every month we have a minimum of 7-8 stories, and we circulate those and we share those. We appreciate people for the work that they're doing with our members every day.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure these stories really resonate with lawmakers too, and we're at the GAC right now. What kind of issues do you think you'll raise with lawmakers as you go on your Hill visits this time around?
Yeah, so, you know, we're reiterating the message of our tax-exempt status and the reason that is the case because of our structure and the value that we create, the impact that we have on our communities and building them up financially because that builds economic development for all of us. So we use the stories to do that. We also use the stories with issues around interchange and how it's necessary for us to have that interchange revenue, which is not excessive, to support and defend against fraud, particularly when we don't have a national federal privacy data privacy standard. So we talk about how reductions in that on either the debit or the credit side would impact us. And currently a hot topic is overdraft and NSF fees. And this is more in the hands of perhaps our regulators, a lot more so at the CFPB and the NCUA than with our lawmakers. But they need to understand that in an institution and a credit union like ours, we do things so that people that are coming to us that have been denied the opportunity to connect to the financial system receive a second chance checking account with us, and we do not provide them overdraft protection on that account. We're protecting them from that potential. They also need to understand that overdrafts are sometimes a way that people manage their money, and sometimes they are very willing to do that because of what they're confronting. Not enough money to pay for a prescription, not enough money to pay for an emergency vet bill. In one of our members' cases, not enough money to purchase a bus ticket to flee the domestic violence situation she was in so that she could get to safety with her parents. So she had to overdraft her account. And these members know that it's a lot cheaper than payday lending or check cashing facilities. Mm-hmm. So that message and those types of stories of how this is a way that that members, you know, perform, live their lives and utilize the service which they have opted in for is something that we'll be reiterating this week on Capitol Hill as well as with our regulators. You know, the other thing is sometimes stories don't work. Sometimes they look for data. So the number of transactions in 2023, we consider excessive overdrafting to be 20 or more per year. We know that those excessive overdraft transactions, that a quarter of them were by members that make over $100,000, and nearly two-thirds were conducted by members that make over $75,000 a year. So it's not the fee that's the issue impacting low-income or moderate-income individuals. It's people that even have higher incomes, in our case the majority, over $75,000 a year in income, who are using it to manage their money from month to month.
Yeah, wow, that's interesting.
So I think connecting data stories with our message, both here in D.C. as well as, you know, the surround sound of doing that back home in the district, because those members of ours are constituents of the lawmakers. Sometimes the regulators may not be listening or putting that consumer-centric, making that member as centric to the decision-making and the thought process, but perhaps making a headline, you know, from the CFPB about junk fees. And sorry, but when somebody's saved from being abused in a domestic violence situation, I think that's probably winds up resulting in a happy ending.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Or at least a better outcome for that moment in time.
Sure, you know? Yeah. On a different note, what's one thing you're looking forward to this year?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. I think the Hispanic initiatives that I talked about as a member of the America's Credit Unions board, it's super exciting to be here at GAC, seeing how all it comes together. And I'm looking forward on the industry front of how we use the unified, more powerful voice of one advocacy organization, America's Credit Unions, to do that. At home, we improve member situations one day at a time. So I'm motivated based on what our team members do every day in working with members and finding a way to say yes, and that keeps me going. If we can move the needle just a degree on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington State and improve people's financial lives one household at a time when they're just trying to get from month to month, I look forward to that every day.
Shalon Pappas, Vice President of Corporate Communications and Government Affairs at First Tech Federal Credit Union, takes us through her path to First Tech, her approach to advocacy, and thoughts on leadership.
Shalon, thanks for stopping by the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fantastic. Exciting time.
Yeah, it sure
very
is.
Very exciting. There's time.
Just a couple things going on here and there.
Just a few thousand people, like 6,000, right, that are here. Nothing to worry about.
Yeah. So I guess for starters, can you tell us about your background and how you got to First Tech Federal Credit Union?
Yeah. So I've been in credit unions now for 22 years as of last week, so very exciting. Oh. I think I, like many of the stories that I've heard while I've been here, is you don't know that you're getting into a credit union, but the credit union has a way of bringing you in. So, you know, I started back at OSU Credit Union in Corvallis, Oregon, and then learned about First Tech after writing their first online banking brochure, so just a few short years ago, and really just worked my way through the credit union industry and First Tech specifically. And as we've grown, there's been continuous opportunities for me to grow. So I was previously the VP of marketing, and now I've just taken on a brand new role.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. You're shifting to more of a corporate communications and community development.
Yes.
What does a typical day look like for you?
It's a lot. Yeah. You know, my span of authority right now is corporate communication, all of our giving and philanthropy, our government advocacy work, which brings me here, and then our DEI and B work within the credit union. So a typical day could be me wearing all of those hats at various points in the day. So it keeps me busy.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And, you know, we're at GEC, and there's a lot of issues around advocacy right now. How would you define your approach to advocacy?
Yeah, you know, I'm newer to this role, but what I do understand is storytelling. And I think, you know, there's a lot of legislation changes, there's a lot of proposals out there, but I think the most important thing is to tell the story about the impact to our members. Mm-hmm. And for First Tech, I have the opportunity to be here to represent all 630,000 plus members that are all across the country and all across the world. And so it's really telling their stories so that we can make sure that we can serve them now and into the future.
Sure, sure. And I'm guessing you'll be going to the Hill visits on Wednesday?
I will. I'll be able to go to the Hill and have some conversations about, you know, continuing to protect the credit union's tax status, continuing to ensure that as legislation comes forward, that our legislators truly understand the impacts on our members. And some things look really good on paper, but if it hurts your family and it hurts your, you know, your living situation, we need to make sure that they know that, but also to continue to thank them for their support and supporting what we do each and every day, because I know their work is very difficult as well.
Yeah, I suppose they have many groups like ours trying to get their attention too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they probably have multiple meetings throughout the day, and we want to show up as a collective credit union impact and just being visible and being vocal. I think that goes a long way. Sometimes people don't feel like that's important work, but it truly is.
Yeah. What do you think are some successful ways to interact with the legislators? Are there any kind of do's and don'ts that you would recommend?
I think getting to know people is the most important thing. So as I'm starting to form relationships, I'm seeing people multiple times so I can refer to when I met them a couple of months ago or when they were back in their district. I think that helps. But also, they're people too. And sometimes in those spaces, it's intimidating, you get a little nervous, but just having a conversation, and people love to talk about themselves. So if you can find a way for people to do that, you'll be just fine.
Yeah, yeah. Can you tell me a bit about your involvement in DEI? And I know you'll be part of the DEI roundtable on Wednesday.
Yes.
What do you do at the credit union, and what do you think you'll talk about at the roundtable?
Yeah, so for First Tech, we call DEI, DEI and B, we add the belonging. Mm. And how we're structured today, DEI, that body of work now does come into my new area. But we do have an employee council. And so that's led by a group of employees that build out our DEI and B strategy every year. It all started as a grassroots approach, but really it's starting to show up at the more strategic level, which I love. We just rolled out inclusion networks for our employees. So now beyond the council and beyond those that are generally interested, we're finding avenues and ways for people to connect. We celebrate together different heritage months. You know, we spend a lot of time trying to educate our employees. I believe, and First Tech believes, that this is not a separate part of our strategy. It's a part of who we are as a credit union. So I'm really excited that I get to participate on a greater level. And then for the roundtable, you know, we had the opportunity to create a checking and savings account for foster youth that are about to age out of the system. And there was really no option to serve this really small group of individuals. And so we had an employee who just happened to learn about a legislation change that allowed us to create accounts so they didn't have to have like a co-signer.
Sure.
And so we were able to build it and launch it and deploy it. And it's just a small thing, but just ensuring that we're serving the underserved. So that's really going to be the focus of my discussion.
Oh, that's great. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's really cool because the way it all came together was employees just saying yes and not feeling like there was a roadblock or we can't do this because of this, or no, they're not going to allow us to do this. The answer was yes, and we figured out how to serve these members regardless of how popular or successful or how many accounts there were. It was just a place to help.
That's great. How has the response been to that?
It's been great. I mean, it's a limited audience, that are in that situation. But what we're doing is we're unlocking the potential for their future. So these individuals not just have access to these accounts, but they also receive financial education and some grants from one of our nonprofit partners, Youth Villages. And so it really starts to shape out someone's future. And that's game changing. I mean, that one life, I mean, many lives, but one life is enough to change.
Oh, that's great. Really neat.
It's a really cool program. And I think for First Tech in general, you know, we call ourselves a committed community partner. And so at First Tech, you'll see 97% of our employees are engaged with either giving or volunteering. So it's definitely a part of what we do every single day.
Yeah, a big part of your culture. That's great.
Yeah, it makes it fun. That's for sure.
How would you define your approach to leadership?
You know, I, as a leader, I believe that being approachable is one of the most important things. You spend a lot of your time at work, and so I want my team to feel like we're as close to a family as you're going to be. I'm not going to ever replace your family, but I want to inspire my team, make my team feel safe and seen so that they can show up as their best selves and do incredible work. If you think about when you're in spaces you don't feel like you belong or you're an imposter, you don't bring everything. You don't bring all the goodness of you to the conversation. You hold back. And when you don't have to do that, it's pretty inspiring.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And what advice would you give to aspiring credit union leaders?
Raise your hand. You know, the way that I was able to move through the credit union was about learning. I wanted to learn everything in the business. And I've had jobs all across the credit union, from IT to business development, marketing, back to business development. I've done so many different things, but because I kept being curious and because I kept raising my hand and saying, I think I can do that. There's a lot of opportunity for younger professionals to remain in the credit union space for a long time in their career. This is, when you come to GAC, you get the power of what credit unions are and the value that you can bring having your entire career here. That feels so powerful. And I hope to extend that to some of the younger professionals that are coming up that take our industry forward. I can't wait to see what they're going to do.
Tom Kane, president and CEO at the Illinois Credit Union System, details how the state's credit unions take advantage of fintech investments.
So you go into the exhibit hall and there's a lot of fintechs. I know you're interested in fintechs.
Yep.
Where do you see that space right now, or what are you kind of interested in?
A lot of different things. We just recently made an investment in Janicee, so we're part owner of that. And it's really cool because for the longest time I have a technical background. And so in previous to credit unions, I used to do a lot of interfaces. I was a software developer trying to connect different systems together. And one of the biggest problems in this industry is everybody wants to connect to the cores. The cores are difficult or expensive to connect to, and you've got a lot of fintechs out there that are trying to get to that. Yeah. Janicee is this middle layer that the fintechs write to that one, and then they have a bunch of core connectors.
Okay.
So for a fintech, you know, I've been involved in Circle and been involved in some other kinds of funds that are looking at fintechs, and biggest question everybody has, or I have for somebody, is what cores do you connect to? And as soon as they are like, well, we're working on that, I'm like, you don't connect to anybody. So you're on an island, basically. So Janicee then serves as that one connector that a fintech can make, and they're just booming. I was just talking to the guys right over here.
Yep.
They're just booming with business now because one fintech connects to one app platform, and then they can get to all these cores.
Okay.
So that's one of the really exciting ones. We also just invested in a company called Avery AI. That is, as the name sounds, it's an AI company. So our business corporation in Visint is one of the first applications for it, but it's really cool because it's an outbound calling bot.
Okay.
So credit unions, you know, they try to connect with their member, new members, a couple weeks after, give them a call. You know, have you activated your debit card? You know, hey, have you, you know, I understand you got an auto loan with us. Do you have debt protection or any of that stuff? So I can tell you a lot of particularly smaller credit unions, they don't have anybody dedicated to doing that.
Yep.
So it's the frontline staff when they have time or whatever. There's this bot with a natural voice calling people, talking them through things. If you, and then if, you know, it can figure out if it should escalate it, if it needs to transfer to a department, if somebody's interested. And I can tell you, a bot will make as many calls as you want, never feel bad about getting hung up on. And it's scripted, well, it's obviously scripted because, but it's also very reactive to however the person, whatever questions they may have or anything like that. So we think that it's the only outbound calling bot like this. So we think, you know, I think it's good for, you know, new member onboarding and also certainly for you know, outbound sales calls, that kind of thing, and cross-selling and that kind of thing.
Okay.
And they actually have, it's interesting too, because there's actually three bots. One bot is auditing it, and they record, because there's a lot of organizations, they want to do random recordings to make sure that they're not, you know, that the people are doing what
they're,
this is, every single one of them is audited. So it's they can understand if a member is upset, then they can immediately escalate it to somebody else,
okay,
and a human being to talk them through that or whatever. So anyway, it's just, there's so many, you know, you talk about trends here, it's AI is a massive trend. And so we're just happy to jump on. We actually invested before the company even had a name.
Oh, okay.
So Aviary AI is only been around for about a month, but it's got to move fast though with that. So
I guess since you invested so early, what do you look for from a fintech, or what do you kind of, how do you decide where to invest? And is it just interesting things that you think solve problems, or do your members come to you with issues and you seek a solution, or?
Well, and yeah, part of it is the people, first of all.
Yeah.
Because ultimately you're investing in those people.
Yeah.
And I've been around long enough, and I have a pretty good BS meter at this point to sort of be able to figure out what's hype and what's not. And I kind of know what questions to ask to me. Like one of them is what cores you, because I've seen a lot of demos and we can do this and this and this. What cores do you connect with? Well, then I'm like, you're not doing anything yet then. And it's, we've looked at very, very early stage companies, which is a very different. I mean, you know, pre-revenue kinds of companies. We've invested in those. And then we've invested farther along and been part of just a regular series, you know, A funding kind of thing. And so there's very different, but it all starts out with the people though. And certainly it's gotta be an application, first of all, that not a lot of other people are doing, that it's unique. Doesn't have to be, you know, brand new that nobody else has thought of kind of thing, but it's getting to be a very crowded space and, you know, and then just to be able to get people's attention, get investors' attention, because you don't want to be the only investor, kind of, you want to get other people. And that's kind of the whole, it's kind of the whole business model of these fintechs, which is very different than credit unions. Mm-hmm. So you've got conservative, relatively slow moving, kind of, we've always done it this way mentality a lot in the credit union space. And then you've got the, you know, fail fast, move quickly, break things attitude of fintech. So it's interesting because I've served as a business analyst for a long time in my career, which is taking the business issue and the business people and bringing them together with the technical people and being able to talk both ways. So one of the things we're doing is with the Circle Fund. So that's, you know, the big fintech fund that's, you know, we had 69 investors in 2021 come together, raised $252 million to invest in fintechs. And so far they've invested in 28. They're going to do one more and then close that fund completely. They've created a new fund, Circle 2, and we're helping them get some investments, because in the Circle 1, I got 13 credit unions to contribute some money. They invested it in us, We turned around and took that money and invested it in Circle. So we raised $2.5 million to invest. That was just in Illinois. We did 13 credit unions and two leagues jumped in as well. We're taking that same model for Circle 2, taking it nationally. So if any credit union is under 100 or under $1 billion, above 100 million, and the minimum direct Circle investment is $2 million, we're looking to, for people to kick in 100 million or 100,000, 200, up to 750,000, because they may feel like the 2 million is too much for them to do. So we're going to take those funds that we get, aggregate them, and then make one big commitment to Circle. We don't have, it could be 5 million, it could be 10 million, we're not sure what it's going to end up being, but
okay.
We're just starting to launch that. And the wonderful thing is it gives credit unions that otherwise wouldn't be able to participate in an invest or in a venture fund like Circle, gives them that opportunity at a much, much lower cost, much lower risk, and they still get all the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
They get the product discounts, they get invited to everything. They just can't vote because I've got the vote.
Sure.
It's because I'm the shareholder.
Yep.
So anyway, it's pretty exciting.
Is that kind of kicking off this spring or some Circle 2?
Well, they're actually they actually launched in
okay.
August.
Okay.
They are almost up to $100 million of commitments. And they've been, one of the things we've been doing is having meetings here with credit unions to tell them about the investment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, larger credit unions are looking to do the full $2 million at least investment directly. And then I'm talking about the smaller credit union option here. So
okay.
They're looking, the fund will be open through August 31st. So there's still plenty of time for people to get in and participate in that. So, but that's a way for credit unions to get visibility into fintechs that otherwise, you know, they wouldn't be able to see individually.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is we get a lot of credit unions engaged because their boards are asking, you know, what are you doing in this area? And so this gives them the opportunity to be able to do something at a relatively low cost and low risk,
yeah.
which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and I assume people can find that by talking to you or on Circle
Absolutely.
Fund?
Absolutely, yep, absolutely. They can contact Circle Fund. They can. I'm, you know, at the league, Illinois
yep.
League, so I'm on LinkedIn, so if people want to find out more, absolutely, they can reach out, so.
And then you sort of mentioned, like, the conservative progression of a lot of credit unions and how fintechs are fast. Where do you see that meshing, or I guess, how do you want to see things progress?
Faster than they are.
Yeah.
But I think I've been in this industry now 20 years, and I think credit unions have made huge strides
okay.
in this area. And if you look through the exhibit hall, you know, there's all sorts of technology
mm-hmm.
solutions. They're not the old solutions. It is difficult, though, because credit unions, you know, have so many embedded systems that they have to replace. It's not like credit unions have a lot of them have a ton of money to be spend on this. And almost more importantly, they don't have the people necessarily that they can just take. And I think there is a bit of project fatigue coming out of the pandemic. A lot of credit unions put in systems and upgrades or whatever during the pandemic because all of a sudden, a lot of people weren't coming into the branch. So there are a lot of remote and digital kinds of solutions people put in. So there was just a massive amount of project work with that. And a lot of the credit unions that I know are just like overwhelmed with, because mm-hmm. they've got so many different systems. And I was talking about Janicee before. One of the things is trying to get, anytime you do any of these upgrades or get a new system, you gotta figure out how do I get it to integrate with the core?
Because mm-hmm.
You don't wanna be sitting there working on this system and working on this system and all that kind of thing. So so that's, I do think things are getting better and faster, and but we have to within this industry because the Chases of the world and Bank of America, they're putting so much money into technology that,
yep.
you know, credit unions have to keep up in yep. some sort of way, so.